You're listening to the Full Contact Fighter Radio Network.
Hey guys, this is Dennis Kang. Hey,
this is Mr. Cripples, a.k.a. the Cat Smasher.
Hey, this is John the Natural Alessio.
Hey, this is Rashad Evans.
Hey guys, this is the Big Frog, Jeff Curran.
Hey, this is Mac Danzig.
Hey guys, this is Jason the Athlete McDonald.
Hi, this is Ivan Salvey.
Hey everybody, this is John Elter J. Dirksen.
Hey, it's Mark Machine Hunting here.
Hey everybody, you are listening to the world's most handsome fighter on the planet. Yes, this is El Guapo, and you are listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio with Kelsey Mowat.
Thank you for tuning in to Full Contact Fighter Radio one more time. I am your host, Kelsey Mowat, coming to you from Vancouver, British Columbia. Joining me as always, Mr. Brendan Lear from Edmonton. How are you doing, Brendan?
I'm well, Kelsey. How are you?
I'm not bad. It's a little getting a little late in the evening and put this show to bed, so to speak. We've got a pretty good show. We got David Loazzo coming on the program. We talked to him earlier today, and so we'll air that segment for everybody. David discussing his future in mixed martial arts, what's going on in regards to him in the UFC and all that stuff, so that's an interesting interview. And then we've also got Lee Mayne on the program. He's a very famous Western Canadian mixed martial artist, kickboxer. He's a promoter. He trains an excellent, one of the head trainers at Canadian Martial Arts Center in Lethbridge, Alberta, which is a small Albertan city, but kind of a MMA hotspot, really. And there's some great fighters coming out of there, so we'll have him on the program as well, Brendan.
It's the Canadian Bible Belt.
Yeah, is it? I wouldn't know.
Well, actually, I think Lethbridge has a really interesting martial arts lineage because I think a lot of the great judo players came out of Lethbridge because many of the Japanese were interned there and they actually stayed there afterwards. So there's a huge Japanese community in Lethbridge. So. There's always been a lot of karate and judo going on there, and many of the Canadian innovators have also been there as well. So it does have a very rich heritage, and that school especially is excellent. Canadian Mixed Martial Arts Center, or Canadian Martial Arts Center, it's called, I think.
Yeah, Canadian Martial Arts Center. Yeah.
Yeah, they have some fabulous fighters coming out of there. So I wouldn't be it wouldn't surprise me if they were the sort of were to become known as the Team Tompkins of the West.
Yeah, there's definitely some great teams coming out of the West now. You know, Team Revolution out of the Vancouver, Lower Mainland, British Columbia area, they certainly have a great crop of fighters. And then you've got Canadian Martial Arts Center, Pro Camp, and Edmonton starting to put together some guys. And then you've got Team Jushido out of Kelowna. They've got some up-and-coming fighters as well. So definitely the sport's getting pretty big all across Canada. And you're right, there's some great teams. Lethbridge is certainly on the map in that sense. And the big news coming out of Lethbridge, and we'll talk to Lee about this, is Jared Kilkenny will be fighting Rico Rodriguez on their New Year's Eve Rumble in the Cage show. So that's huge news, and we'll have Lee on the program to discuss that. So stay tuned. You're listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio.
Mixed martial arts history will be made as the International Fight League continues its 2007 inaugural season Friday, February 2nd at the Reliant Arena. See Boss Rutan's Anacondas battle Pat Miletich's Silverbacks and Antonio Inoki Sabres face off against Don Fry's Scorpion. Plus the super fight between MMA legends Matt the Law Lindland and Carlos the Rona Newton. Be there Friday, February 2nd, 7:30 p.m. at the Reliant Arena. For tickets, call Ticketmaster at 713-629-3700 or log on to Ticketmaster.com.
The best stuff for MMA clothing is definitely the Full Contact Fighter Shop, because with FCF gear, you don't have to be a champion to dress like one. Go check it out by now. I know you've seen it, that classic FCF logo on so many great items, like our classic t-shirts, tricot jackets. We've got new high-quality rash guards, plus the NXP Extreme Fight shorts, which are available in red, black, navy, or camo. Of course, don't forget about our fantastic FCF hoodies, a variety of NHB corduroy and distress wash hats, plus now open is the FCF sticker and banner shop. We've got a wide assortment of International Fight League merch, all your favorite teams there. Just head to www.fcfighter.com or call 516-676-0033. That number again is 516-676-0033. Joining Full Contact Fighter Radio from La Belle Provence is Mr. David Loazzo. How are you doing, David?
I'm good, man. I'm good. Thanks for having me on the show, guys.
Yeah, our pleasure. David, my first question for you, I wanted to confirm some things that are on your MySpace and anytime your MySpace page. Anytime, I guess, you talk about MySpace accounts, you want to actually affirm that it's the actual person talking, etc. On your MySpace, David, it's saying that you've signed to fight at Showtime in February. Is that true?
Yeah. Whatever it says on on that my MySpace page, that's the real me, man. That's all true, man.
Okay. You know, people get those accounts get hacked into, or sometimes there's a lot of people pretending to be others on the show. People have no lies, I guess, pretending to be others on MySpace. So you want to always confirm that it's the actual person speaking.
Yeah. That's me, man.
So for your fans, tell us a little bit more about that. What's going on? Do you have an opponent announced? And when is the fight going to take place? And what exactly is the event?
The event is February 10th. No opponent yet. But I know it's going to be in Memphis, Tennessee.
Okay.
It's going to be held in Tennessee, and it's going to be live on Showtime, man.
And Cole, what do you know about the nature of the Showtime promotion? Are they going to do live shows every couple months, or like every month, or like what does your contract look like, and what do you know about the structure of the promotion?
I don't think they're gonna have shows every month, you know. But I got a 3-fight deal with these people, and it's a very, very the biggest contract I've ever signed, you know, money wise. So it's dealing like this, it means business, you know. But we'll see.
David, I guess so. Obviously, this confirms that you'll no longer be with the UFC, or for the time being, you won't be with the UFC. What were your thoughts when they told you, David, that they weren't going to be signing a new contract?
Man, when it happened, man, I almost cried, man. You know, because like I really felt like UFC was my home, man. You know, and I didn't expect that at all. You know, because yes, I did lose my last two fights, but you know, I didn't get finished. I didn't get outclassed. You know, it's I lost my decision. Fought like a warrior. You know, and. My last fight was pretty close, you know, and it's not like Swick did much more than damage than I did, you know. So it's kind of it was kind of deceiving for you know, to get that phone call from the UFC, you know, telling me that they're done with me. So it was heartbreaking, man, because my fan base is all there, man.
Yeah.
All my fans, you know, I made them in the UFC. The big fights I had were in the UFC, you know, and I just love the show. I love the UFC. I love the people, the staff. I love for everything, you know. But they kicked me out. So what do you want me to do, man? I can't just stay at the door on my knees and keep begging, you know.
Yeah.
I got a bill to pay, so gotta move on, man.
Well, was there any contingencies on it? Did they say to you, Crow? I mean, if you put together some wins in another organization, perhaps they'd have you back. Was anything?
Yeah. I spoke to them. He told me like to put on a couple of wins, and then he'd bring me back. But we'll see. You know, it's like now that I'm out, you know, and I signed with Showtime, which might be a big struggle. I don't know what's gonna happen. You know, nothing's for sure. You know, so we'll see.
Right.
See how they take it.
Cool. So what other reason did they give you other than you lost that close fight to Swick? They just didn't see you in their plans?
It's part of the contract, you know. If you lose a fight on the contract, on the 3-fight deal with UFC, you know, they can cut you and you know, not let you finish your contract. So that's what happens, basically.
And then, so they didn't say to you, you know, they were disappointed in your performance or anything like that. It was just left that you lost a couple fights in a row, and so try to win.
I know, Joe Silva wasn't happy with my performance, you know, with my last two performances. So you know, they thought my fights were boring. So.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that, David. I mean, you're fighting against Swick. Obviously, you're pretty tentative the first couple rounds. I know you had said in interviews that was part of your game plan. Mike Swick is a notorious fast starter. In the third round, you really took it to him. You've had a couple months now since the fight. David, you look back on it now, and do you have any thoughts on maybe a game plan that would have been a little bit different? Would you have stepped up the pace against him earlier?
The thing is that one thing with Mike Swick, like people say I was tentative, but Swick didn't do much more than me. You know, Mike Swick would hit and run for hell. You know, he's running and move. He was hard to catch. You know, I was trying to put pressure, and you, you guys saw the fight. Every time I tried for pressure, he went for the takedown, you know. He didn't stand and bang when I was coming in, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it's not like, it's just he had a very good game plan, very good timing for the takedowns, and he neutralized my my attacks when I was coming forward and attacking, and that's it. But I wasn't tentative at all. It's just that when I came forward and tried to throw bombs, he'd go for the takedown, you know, and he'd hold me there and hold me in half guard, and, you know, get stealed around like that. He had a great strategy, you know, and, you know, it made me look bad. The strategy made me look bad, but it's not like I was tentative. You know, just look at the fight again, you're going to see exactly what I'm talking about. I was going to fight, man. Because he'd come in with these fast punches. I'd cover every single punch. Not one punch caught me flush in the fight. And then I go forward to try to attack again, and he'd be gone, like running. You know, so he had a great strategy, great execution of his plan, of his game plan, and he won the fight. It's not that bad, you know. You win some, you lose some, and I definitely think that UFC should have not cut me after this fight.
David, do you feel like you need to fight more? It seems like in the UFC, there were long periods of time between your fights. Are you comfortable with that, or do you feel that you need to fight more to keep up the speed on your game?
Yeah, that's what I want to do. I want to fight more. You know, I wanted UFC to put me like on little cards. You know, like Ultimate Fight Nine and stuff like that. I wanted them to put me on those cards. But when I got my manager to call to tell him that this is where they told me that they didn't want me back, you know. So yeah, that's it.
Does the Showtime deal?
I want to fight more, so I will be fighting more. You're gonna see a lot more of me.
And does the Showtime
training? I train my whole training, the way I train, who's gonna be cornering me and all that stuff. The whole stuff, the whole formula changed, so it's gonna be doing me a lot of good, you know.
And does the Showtime deal allow you to fight outside of that contract, David?
No.
No, so you have to you can only fight exclusively within Showtime?
Yeah.
Okay. And you mentioned your training partners. You're kind of back and forth now, it seems. I read on your MySpace as well that you've been training with Brandon Vera, and now you're back in Montreal. So, David, are you at that point now? Are you training out of a couple camps?
No, I just train with Brandon, the guys at City Boxing, and I got you with Rob Kamen, and back home, same formula back home, but like a month and a half before the fight, I go back to San Diego and LA, and I train down there with Rob Kamen, Brendan Vera, couple of good guys, man, There was some good sparring in LA last time I was there. There was Mayhem Miller, there was Rampage Jackson, couple of good guys. It's fun training.
David, do you find that's refreshing because you're training at TriStar basically your whole career? Did you just need a breath of fresh air, or is there some more substantial work that you're doing down training in the States?
It's both, man. Fresh air. I need to change it up, you know, it's important to get new training partners and new people to train with, man. New atmosphere to renew myself and to get better, man. Just to change it up. I need to change it up. I need to take my fight game to the next level, you know. And I've been on the plateau for a couple of months, you know. And now I'm just bringing it to the next level, just the way I wanted to.
David, when George St. Pierre won the welterweight title recently over Matt Hughes, you could see you in the background, you're in his corner, and you were very emotional. Just tell us a little bit about what was going through your head, and what does that mean to you to see one of your dear friends, long-time training partners, win the championship?
Man, because at that moment, what was going crazy, I was like, man, you know, it's like anything's possible, man. If you really believe in your dreams and you dedicate yourself, you know, anything's possible, you know, because we came from the same place, man. You know, it's like we're both I remember when we were both going to train together, and it's like we both were broke and going to school and working, and it was hard, you know, and we know we had no sponsors. We had the hardest time just getting a protein shake, you know, after training. It was hard, and now you know, George is a you know, world champion, man. So I was so happy, man, because I felt like I won with him that night. You know, it's like it was an awesome feeling, man. Awesome feeling, because he's the fighter who I'm the closest to in the fight. So it kind of when he fights, it's kind of like when I fight, you know. And I was really happy, man. Especially the fact that he lost in that years before, and people count him out after he lost, and he made the comeback of the millennium, man. He just came back and destroyed the whole division.
Yeah.
You know, destroyed the division. It was insane how he did it, man.
Yeah.
David, fighters often talk, and especially since the IFL has come into existence, whether or not you actually do fight as a team, or whether or not that makes sense. And a lot of fighters say that they fight for themselves, and fighting is a solitary sport. But the look on your face and all your teammates' face when George won, you know, it was actually a very touching moment, because there was no doubting that you weren't just happy for him, but you were celebrating with him, you know, and you felt that victory as if it was a victory of your own. Are you going to find that again, do you think, that kind of relationship in your training?
For sure, man. The thing is that I'm still with George, you know. We still hang out. We still train together when we're both in Montreal, because we're both traveling all over the place, you know. But me and George, we're still tight. We're still tight, for sure. But, man, I got very tight relationship with Brandon Rivera, you know, where he's like a brother. Same thing with Dean, you know. I'm very tight with these guys, and they're very good people. And, yeah, man, when they fight, you know, I get as nervous, man, as nervous as when I fight.
David, I wanted to ask you your thoughts on the Rich Franklin-Anderson Silva fight. You know, that was a very memorable win for Anderson Silva. There's a lot of different thoughts and predictions before that fight took place. Everyone knew Anderson was going to be a tough challenge for Rich, but a lot of people were saying, believed at the time that Rich would come through. Having fought Rich, David, what were your thoughts on Silva's victory over Franklin? Were you surprised at the ferocity?
I was surprised it happened that early, you know. One thing is that I knew that technically Anderson Silva had more assets spending up than Rich, but Rich is such a big 185 pounder that the weight was going to make a difference, you know, because Anderson Silva could actually make 170.
Yeah.
You know, he could make 170, but I thought it was going to make a big difference in the weight. But Anderson Silva's a stud, man. You know, he's a very accurate striker, yeah, he shocked the world, man. He did his thing that night.
Were you surprised?
But, you know, anything can happen at any time in a fight. You know, people are like, oh, this thing, oh, he frankly got killed. Yeah, he didn't get killed. He got caught. He got caught, man. He got caught in the clinch, and that was Anderson Silva's strong point, and that's it. But things could go the other way. Maybe one next time they fight. You never know what can happen, man.
Yeah.
Did you ever think when you're watching that fight, why didn't I tie clinch Rich Franklin?
Oh, for sure. for sure, man. For sure, but that's the name of the game, you know. Everything happens for a reason, you know. You know, God has big plans for me, I believe, and if it didn't happen that night, it's probably for a reason. So, let's wait and see.
David, my last question for you is in regards to you fighting up here in Canada again, where you're from. Do you see that in your future at all? I know you have the deal with Showtime, but would you like to come up here and fight in Canada again for one of the organizations up here?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Right now, man, I just bought a house, so I just want to make as much money as I can, man. My mentality can't change since I bought my crib, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, man, I'm gonna go wherever it's good for me, you know, cause it's, man, I'm turning 27 on Sunday, and it's like, I gotta, you know, invest money and build my future, you know, it's, the board, man.
Well, it looks like you got a lot going on. You got the Crowware stuff. I've seen some of the commercials for Crowware, your line of clothing, and you got those Exiance commercials out there. So looks like the Crow brand is building up, man.
Yeah, man. The Crow gear is all over the place, man.
Brandon, anything else for David?
The last thing I just wanted to say was good luck in the new promotion. And do you know? Have you heard of any other fighters being signed? Are you one of the first signings in that promotion? When do you think we're going to be able to? When do you think they're going to have a press conference announcing some new fighters?
There should be a press conference on Thursday in LA. It's going to be Pro Elite is going to hold it in LA. I don't know if I'm going to be there, but all the fighters that have a name and that are signed are going to be there. So you guys will see on Thursday.
All right.
And are you sworn to secrecy at this point about who else that might be?
I don't know. I don't know who else is signed. That's the thing.
Yeah, fair enough. But you know, we understand. We had to try, buddy. We had to try. All right, Crow. Well, thanks again for taking some time out, man. And we wish you all the best of luck in the new year. And happy birthday,
thanks,
by the way.
Man.
Happy birthday.
Hey, thank you, guys. I appreciate it, man. Happy holidays. I wish you guys
happy
all the
birthday.
Better. Thank you, guys. All the best to you and your families, okay?
Okay.
So take care.
Take care.
Thanks a lot.
Okay, bye-bye.
They fight for different things. For some, it's for fame. For others, it's a job. Some fighters just like to hurt people. Visit BodogFight.com and see who the fighters are and why winning matters to them. They'll have a chance to win, but only if that next round matters more than anything. View highlights, read fighter bios, watch TV episodes, or see when the next live event is. Don't miss any mixed martial arts action. BodogFight.com. Make it matter.
The best coverage of the toughest fighters in the toughest sport can only be found in Full Contact Fighter. For over a decade now, FCF has been bringing mixed martial arts fans across the globe in-depth reporting of the world's greatest sport. From Brazil, Japan, Europe, Canada, and the U.S., FCF brings you all the fighter bios, event reports, training and technique tips any avid MMA fan would want. Every month, 12 times a year, we do it. Full Contact Fighter is your best source for MMA coverage. Pick up the latest edition of the paper by subscribing at www.fcfighter.com or call 516-676-0033. Again, the number 516-676-0033. Full Contact Fighter, the undefeated, no-holds-barred new source of the world. And when you call, tell them that FCF Radio sent you.
This is Spencer the Kingfisher, and this is the Full Contact Fighter Radio.
Welcome back to Full Contact Fighter Radio, and joining the program now is Lee Main from Lethbridge, Alberta. Lee, how are you doing today?
Very good.
Lee, I think it's safe to say that many would consider you one of the founding forefathers of mixed martial arts in Western Canada. Your thoughts on a comment like that?
Well, being old gets you anything, and I guess being the first guy to get punched in the head on a regular basis, maybe that's a good thing, I don't know. But, yeah, it's all fun.
Well, I think you're being far too humble. You know, Lee, honestly, before we get into what's coming up with your promotion and some of the fighters you train with and even your own career, did you ever think mixed martial arts would get to this point? Like I mentioned, you've been involved in this sport and helping promote it and kickboxing in Western Canada for years now. Did you ever think it would get to this point where we're at now?
Yeah, you know, when I first started, you know, we did it because we loved it and we just were messing around. We didn't really know a lot of what we were doing technically or otherwise, and we just learn as you go. And I definitely saw when I fought my first fight at a show, I thought, man, I could do this. And there's certain things we thought we could do better and do more to put back to the fighters. And that's kind of what I've always stuck to is as a fighter first and as a coach, what shows do I like to go to? And, you know, for those reasons, how am I treated as a fighter and how do we make the show go for the fighter? And, you know, I definitely saw it would get bigger and I thought it was the most exciting thing there is. So, you know, better than boxing, better than anything out there. So I definitely saw it as potentially being a big thing, you know, whether anyone would take it to that level. And, you know, obviously now people are, and people have done a good job of making it work as a business as well as making it work, you know, coaching, and everyone's learning from each other and sharing their ideas, which helps everyone get better. So it's gone the way I thought it would go. It's just nice to be a part of it.
Now, you mentioned the business side of things, and you're involved in the Rumble in the Cage promotion and a big show coming up, New Year's Eve, season's beatings at the NMAX Center. And the main event, Lee, is huge. Jared Kilkenny versus Rico Rodriguez. What are your thoughts on that fight? You train Jared. He's one of Canada's better up-and-coming heavyweight fighters. Do you think that's a big step up for him to take on a guy, former UFC heavyweight champion Rico Rodriguez, or is Jared ready?
No, it's a huge step up. I mean, it's one of those opportunities that came along, and we just said, yeah, let's just do it. You know, I mean, he hasn't been training that long, and like a lot of my guys, we just get in there and scrap, and whoever they put in front of us, if we go out of town or wherever, we say, yeah, let's do it, because we're going to learn from it. Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm not worried about padding guys' records or anything like that. It's, let's just fight and see what happens. And, you know, for the most part, we come out really well, and our team has a really good winning percentage. And for J-Rod, I mean, he hasn't been training that long, but he's learning quick, and, you know, that's what he needs. He needs to find out where he's at, and there's always a test of, you know, who's going to push you to find out where your conditioning's at, who's going to push you with your stand-up, who's going to push you on the ground. And when you get beat by someone, then you find out where your holes are and what you need to work on. So, and a great opportunity. If he beats him, you know, he gets more recognition. And if he loses to him, he's going to learn and benefit. And so it's a win-win, in my opinion, for him as an up-and-coming fighter.
Yeah. Well, I want to ask you about J-Rod's last fight. There's a bit of controversy in regards to that, and I didn't get a chance to see it.
Yeah.
But first, I just wanted to ask you as well. I understand that the season beatings card will be available to Canadians in cinema in theaters. Is that correct?
Yeah. They got a hardcore fighting championship fighting series and all that. They got to deal with the Cineplex theaters,
mm-hmm.
and it's going to be shown live across Canada, so in select theaters, and you know you have to check your local place, see if they're going to hold it. But yeah, just like, you know, watching WWE and all that in there, you just go in there and pay for a ticket, and you got the huge screen and popcorn and whatever you want, and sit down and watch the fight. So if you're not within driving distance to make it out and see it's probably, you know, one of the greatest fight cards in Canada, then, you know, you still get to see these guys fight. So it's kind of cool.
Right. And, you know, I saw the press release, and there's a couple other very notable Lethbridge fighters mentioned. Do you have any opponents lined up for some of the other guys, like Jesse Bonfeld or Jason Day, Justin Tavernini? I mean, there's a ton of guys that you guys have competing across all of Canada.
Yeah.
Is there any other fights yet that you can confirm?
Yeah, right now we've got confirmed for Justin Tavernini, Clint Godfrey from South Dakota, Rapid Cities. He's had several fights, and I saw him fight on Winnipeg when I was out there. Good scrapper. And Jay Day's fighting Scott Arnold from out in Montreal.
Okay.
So those are all confirmed. Right now we're sitting with 14 confirmed fights for the show.
Wow.
And, you know, some of my up-and-coming guys. And we got another fight I'm really looking forward to for out-of-towners, Graydon Tanis from Knuckles.
Yeah.
Is fighting Elmer Waterhen from Saskatoon.
Mm-hmm.
I think that could be a good tilt. So, yeah, it'll be exciting.
Yeah, Elmer's definitely known for being a very entertaining fighter. I mean, whether it was his fight with Jesse Bonfeld, who you train with, or his last fight against McDonald, Jacob McDonald, he's definitely known for a guy who brings it.
Yeah.
Now, I wanted to ask you about J-Rod's last fight, Kilkenny, against Tim Hegg. And you know, I know you train with Jared. He's one of your students. And there were different varying reports, and I don't want to take too much away from Tim Hegg, who was, you know, I think, I believe it was his MMA debut, but there was reports that there was an extended fight delay because of a mouthpiece falling out, etc. J-Rod had Tim in trouble, or maybe explain to us your vantage point on that.
Yeah, I think it was Tim's third or fourth fight, I'm not sure on that, it wasn't his debut, but it was, you know, he had a few fights, and again, he did a great job, and a tough as nails guy. From, you know, what I remember, you know, Jared had him, was hitting him, and he caught him with a right or a left, the guy's mouthpiece went flying, the guy went down to a knee against the cage, and was waving to stop, and so J-Rod went in to, you know, for the finish, and the guy was waving his hand, so J-Rod steps back, and then the ref standing there, oblivious to what's going on, the guy said, oh, you know, I lost my mouthpiece, or whatever, and so they stopped the fight, and tried to find a mouthpiece, which had fallen out of their cage and was on the ground in their corner, and their corner obviously couldn't find it and pick it up and clean it and whatever, so it took a long time for that to happen.
Mm-hmm.
He had a chance to recover and then keep fighting. You know, that'd be my complaint, is that there's no timeouts in MMA.
Yeah.
Right? Especially when you're in a situation like that where you're getting rocked and you're down and the guy's ready to go in for the finish. But, you know, I never made a formal complaint after, and I never will, because the bottom line for Jared, he needed to go see how far he could go, because we knew his condition was better than it was his first. He won his first few fights and still be gassed because, you know, it was like a minute and a half fighting, he was gassed. So we kept working on it. And so by seeing him fight there going into the second round, we got to see how far he could go. Now we know, man, we got to step it up on other levels.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a good learning experience. And again, you know, everyone's going to lose, so it wasn't like crucial that, oh, geez, you know, I'm going to freak out because he lost the fight. And Tim did a great job of recovering and came out blasting in the second round when he saw Jared with his hands down. And, you know, Jared was taking the shots to the head and, you know, wasn't going down or out. The ref just jumped in because that answer blows, and he was just too tired to keep going. So, that's just the way it was, and so be it. We're going to learn from that and move on.
Yeah, so it kind of sounds like he's going to want to step up his conditioning, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, we're working hard on it, but we just don't know, right? Is it enough? Is it not enough? And we knew coming to fight Rico that he's going to need everything because he's a big guy and he's not going to get tired.
Mm-hmm.
And if he's on top of you, you're in trouble. You know what I mean? So we got to keep working that. And it was good. It was good for me as a coach to see what he needs, you know, see another level that he needs to go to. And him as a fighter, he realizes that he thought his condition was way better, and it was way better. He went way 3 times as long as he's ever fought before, and a hard fight, 2 guys banging on each other. And now he knows what he has to do more. So we got all our game plan laid out to get him to the next level. So
now you mentioned Rico Rodriguez and the fact that he's going to be well conditioned, and it just basically sounds from reports you hear that Rico has really started to work on his shape, trying to get back in shape. He's apparently, I've heard talk that he's been down to as much as 275 for a guy who fought well over 300 pounds last year. Is that what you guys are hearing at your camp as well, that it seems like Rico started to take mixed martial arts pretty serious again and is trying to get back in the shape that we previously saw him in?
Yeah, that's, you know, again, I saw him fight when he fought that Ron Waterman. He looked good there, you know, and I guess he just fought down in Mexico, and he's trying to stay active,
mm-hmm.
which is a big part of it. And he's, you know, getting down low, like he's supposed to come in for this fight at 265. So, and he says it won't be a problem. So, you know, that's great, you know, and the better shape he's in, the better fight he's going to put on. And, we're going to see what happens, right? I don't care who you are, if you stand in front of J-Rod and he's hitting you, he's going to do damage to you. And he's got to, you know, like anybody, he's got to, ground game takes the longest to pick up on.
Mm-hmm.
And he's getting pretty good at it and comfortable with it, but he's still, a rookie in all levels. So it's going to be a tough, tough fight, but he's not afraid to stand in front of his hometown crowd and bang away with the former champ and see what happens. So.
Yeah, I'm sure Lethbridge will be quite hyped up for that fight. There's no doubt about that. Another guy I wanted to ask you about was Jason Day, who's quickly becoming one of the more notable light heavyweights in Canada. He's really turned his career around, especially in the last couple of years. He's winning 95% of his fights. And then you mentioned that he'll be fighting on your card, and then it's also been announced he's going to be fighting Martin Desilets, who's one of the more noted up-and-coming light heavyweights from TKO organization in Quebec.
Right.
Knowing Jason as you do, how do you think he matches up against a guy like Martin?
I don't know much about, I hear he's kind of more like a brawler, that he'll swing hard, and he's not technically real sound. Not a great ground guy, but not bad. And so, you never know what you're going to get. You can hear all kinds of reports that the guy could have, obviously the guys are working on it every day, just like we're working on it. So their games are going to get better. And, all we've done is, you look on the internet and everyone says who's number one, who's number two, and everyone has their opinion. And all we said was, give me the top 10 and let's go fight them.
Mm-hmm.
If we can't get them to come fight at our show, then let's go fight them at their show, or let's go fight them at MSC, let's fight them on King of the Cage, let's go fight them on, we don't care.
Yeah.
I mean, I told my guys from day one, if we don't get invited to any other show, we're doing a show a month, so you're going to fight no matter what.
Yeah.
But if we can have our guys fight at other shows, because we know our guys come to bang and to perform, so promoters, usually want our guys out there. We come with our medicals, we show up, all that kind of stuff. The opportunities will be there. So, Ricardo Francois, people talk, oh, he's not going to beat him, blah, blah, blah. Well, he just destroyed him,
mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And it just sometimes that's the way it goes, You catch a guy with a good thing or you don't catch him, and that's why everyone talks who's going to beat who. I said, well, that's why we fight, because you don't know who's going to beat who, how matchups go and whatnot. So let's just fight. If you're a promoter and you got a guy and you want one of our guys, we'll show up. We'll fight. division, we're trying to get to be number one spot, whether they fight on our show or whoever, you know. And there's guys that say they want to fight and they'll fight anybody. Well, I don't see them fighting anyone, you know.
Yeah. Well, so, another fighter I wanted to ask you about is your son, Jordan, who's starting to be mentioned in the same circles as some of Canada's greater, you know, younger up-and-coming fighters. Chris Horodecki, Rory McDonald are two names that you constantly hear. And now Jordan's name starting to get thrown in the mix. Tell us a little bit about your son. Is he even 18 years old yet? I mean, he's already got several fights. Has he even turned 18 yet?
No, he just turned 17 in October, so just turned 17. You know, again, and that, I always laugh at, I'm never on the internet, I'm not a computer guy, and I always hear, you know, people come and say, you know, someone writes a report about him, and next thing, and then people complain, oh no, so-and-so is better, and this guy's better, you know, again, no one's ever claiming that you're the best fighter in the world, they're saying you're one of the better ones, you know, and for under 18 guys fighting, there's not many out there, you know, and Rory McDonald is a super stud, and Hordecki's, you know, been fighting for a while and doing really, really well, and a stud, so these guys are all good, and it's great to be mentioned with those guys. And, you know, as far as Jordan goes, he just wants to fight. You know, he wants to stay busy. And I gave him three options for this Rumble, three fighters that he could, you know, if you could pick which guy you fought, who would you fight? And he picked Kevin Manderson because Kevin had the most fights and the best record.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, that's his mentality. He goes, well, I'm not going to get better fighting guys I should beat. Just because I'm 17 and they're older, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean they're a better fighter, right? I've been training. He trains with Justin Tavernini every day. He trains with, you know, Tim Tamaki and Jay Day, and, you know, he's taking these guys down. He's standing toe-to-toe with them. He's in, you know, the Cavalli Macchia, Jason McDonald came down, and they're just sparring with him, and he's hanging in there, you know, like, but he's willing to take his licks like all of our guys are, and he's willing to learn, and he's willing to fight these guys too. You know, say, oh, let's just do it.
Now, is that a confirmed fight against Manderson?
It's a confirmed fight.
Okay.
And, you know, and that's, again, a huge step up for him because Kevin's really good, mm-hmm. you know, really good, and he's strong. And that's one thing Jordan faces when he fights these guys is they have that adult strength where, you know, he can be strong, but he's still only 17. And, that, you know, he's got to work around it because he's not, if he's waiting for 16 and 17-year-olds to fight, he'll never fight. Because there's only Rory out there, there's only another kid out there under 18 that's actually fighting that we know of. You know, that's worth fighting. So that's just the way it is. So he's either going to fight these older guys and just take his licks, and, you know, he's been doing well, but he's going to fight the guys like Kevin that he may not beat, and but he's going to learn from it, you know, and what he needs to work on, and how's he going to get better. Because every day, training with our guys, you know, that's the great thing about our team and it being so big. There's guys that can dominate you on all levels. Like, we don't have anyone that'll stand toe-to-toe with Justin, and he's 140 pounds. Doesn't matter how big you are, they'll stand with you, right, and take you apart. So when it comes to the ground game, you got a guy like Jay Day who's really smooth and controls on the ground, and he's weighing 220 pounds, and he's squishing you. So when you fight a guy in your weight class, it's like, oh, it's not that big a deal. But you got to deal with the speed and the tenacity of the guy in your class. So overall, these guys are getting better just because, again, who you train with, you know.
Now, you touched on my next question a little bit. Jason McDonald had told us earlier in the week that he had been down doing some training with you, and of course Victor Valimaki, who makes his UFC debut Wednesday night. Tell us a little bit about that. I mean, from your perspective of training with Jason and as he gets ready for Chris Lieben, obviously in a guy with Chris Lieben, I'm assuming Jason's probably spending a lot of time working on fighting a southpaw and a guy who's noted for having some power.
Yeah, I mean, it's great to have, you know, guys who aren't, I don't know how to say it. They're not worried about, you know, you need new training partners to push you and this and that, and you get comfortable. It's like, you know, I roll with JD every day, and he knows my moves, and I know his. I see it coming just as soon as he starts it. But he'll do that same move on someone new, and all of a sudden they've got, like, caught in it. You know what I mean? You just get used to it. So, like McDonald said, it's nice to train with other people who want to push, who are hungry to compete with you, guys that move differently and all that kind of stuff, right? And then, again, we've got a big team, so I can have 10 guys lined up and, you know, playing games of murder and just keep pushing to try and get the guy tired.
Yeah.
Because I don't see that, you know, the guy, the whole time I train with him, I don't see him tired. And because, you know, everyone else lined up ready to fight him is gassed before he is, and they're coming in fresh every time. You know, so it's good that way. He gets new faces, new bodies, everyone that moves different. You know, again, we have guys that are, you know, like Justin, are super strong in the clinch with the Muay Thai clinch and kicking and all that. Well, if he's not working kicks and clinching, well, then that's something that you may get caught by, you know, and so it gives you just more exposure. It's like why we like cross-training with people. It was great having him here for our guys because they got to see, here's a guy who's made it, who's doing really well, and is still willing to learn and train with other people, which keeps our guys humble knowing that we have to keep cross-training and learning. And they got to have him there and being around that. It's all being comfortable, you know. The first time you go to a UFC show, for example, you're like overwhelmed with the lights and this and that and the other thing. Well, the second, third time you've been, okay, it's just another show. You know, so getting guys over that edge mentally more than anything is like, turn the guy, yeah, you know, the guy may outbox me and he may tap me out, but at least I know my game isn't total crap. You know what I mean? I got some game and I can hang with the guy to a certain degree. And it helps you know, okay, on a scale of 1 to 10, I might be a 5 with him, so what do I have to do to become a 6, then a 7, then an 8, so I have a complete game. And, you know, they work a lot of boxing, you know, and little details like that that the guys were working on with him and everything. Everyone else's boxing got better just from having McDonald and Victor here because of how they moved.
Yeah.
You know, so overall, I think it was beneficial both ways. And, you know, obviously, we got an octagon here to train in so he can work getting off the fence. And, you know, like for Victor was a good thing because he doesn't need to really work in where he's at. And, you know, he's going out to fight in a cage. He never fought in a cage before. You think it'll all be the same, but it's not.
No.
From fighting in a ring. So my guys don't think nothing about it, being thrown into the cage and getting up off the floor. Because they've done it so often. Doesn't mean they're going to get out when they fight a guy, but it's not a freak thing. Like, oh, crap, I'm used to being through the ropes and the ref stopping and turning us, you know, or standing us back up. So it's been good.
So my last question for you, Lee, is in regards to your own career. I mean, you fought earlier this year, knockout win over Trevor Schmidt. What's in store for you? You're a well-accomplished Muay Thai fighter. You've got several MMA fights under your belt. Are we going to see Lee Main back in action anytime soon?
I don't know. It's one of those things. I had back surgery, and it won't get better. You know what I mean? Like, it sits about 80%, so I can stay in good enough shape to roll with the guys and hold pads and to spar with them. But to push to the level to get the conditioning that you need to fight 3 rounds, I don't see it happening, and that's the frustrating part for me, because I feel like now I finally know something, but now my body, you know, 39 years old, and I got a lot of injuries, and just to fight the guys that are out there, like, I don't want to fight suit cans,
yeah.
Right? So I want to fight the guys that are good, because I want to be challenged, but yet the biggest reason I would lose that, I feel, is conditioning. I just start getting tired after a while, and I think, oh, I'll take this fight, and I'll push it, really look like it. Well, day in, day out of hard training sessions, after three weeks in, my body is physically just shutting down, and then I can't even train the other guy. So I get to the point where I have to decide, if I take a fight, I have to neglect everybody else, the gym, plus all my other, you know, businesses that I own, promoting shows. It's just, you're the fighter, you're not a fighter kind of thing, right? I don't want to be half-assed, but, I mean, I know when I go out and fight, I always joke, you know, you got one good round out of me, it's going to be exciting. Either I'm getting knocked out or they're getting knocked out, but something's happening.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's okay. And the right fight came along, I would jump at it. You know, someone said, oh, we need, for example, J-Rod said, I hurt my hand, I can't fight. They need someone to fill in last minute for Rico Rodriguez. I'd jump in there in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not worried about fighting these guys. Just, you know, fine, I know I got a limited gas tank and I have to work around it. So, no future plans really. Just, you know, again, enjoying the sport, and it's great seeing these, passing on the knowledge of, I always tell my guys, man, my first 5 fights in MMA, I didn't have a clue what I was doing compared to what I know now. And you guys, your first fights, you're coming in with way more base knowledge just because we know you need to know your mount escapes, your side mount escapes, you have to know how to defend the clinch, you have to know how to, you know, we got this base curriculum, that you have to know, or you should know, to get in there. And if you don't, then you better be fighting a guy who doesn't know it as well, so you have a pretty fair fight. That's how I try and match guys up too, you know. And that just helps these new guys come in. You know, again, our guys are willing to get in there and bang with anyone because we feel that fundamentally our curriculum and what we do is really solid. And for whatever reason, the water, whatever, our guys, you know, they want to scrap. Our guys are chewing on tires in the back before they go out. You know, they want to get in there and fight. They don't care if they lose either. They just want to fight.
Well, there's no question that mixed martial arts. Lethbridge is quickly becoming one of the well-known MMA hotbeds in Western Canada, if not of all in all of Canada, and you're certainly one of the main reasons for that, Lee. So we appreciate you coming on the show, and good luck with the big show, Rumble in the Cage, coming up New Year's Eve, season's beatings.
Great, thank you very much.
Okay, take care.
You got it.
Mixed martial arts history will be made as the International Fight League kicks off its 2007 inaugural season Friday, January 19th at the Oracle Arena. See Maurice Smith's Tiger Sharks battle Marco Huas's Condor. Plus, sibling rivalry comes to life as Ken Shamrock's Lions square off against Frank Shamrock's Razor Claws. Be there Friday, January 19th, 7:30 p.m. at the Oracle Arena. For tickets, call Ticketmaster at 510-625-8497 or log on to Ticketmaster.com.
FCF Radio has been on the air now for a few months, and we just wanted to thank everyone for the feedback and support. The show is now available for download or subscription on iTunes. It can still, of course, be heard at fcfighter.com. If you have any questions for me or Brendan, please email your questions, suggestions, and feedback to radio at fcfighter. Again, that's radio at fcfighter.com. On one other note, if you're emailing to find out if, in fact, there were two teams in the CFL with the same name at the same time, yeah, it wasn't a bit. We weren't lying. Ottawa Rough Riders, Saskatchewan Rough Riders. Don't be a lazy skid. Just go look it up if you don't believe me. Welcome back to Full Contact Fighter Radio. And Brendan, we're closing up this episode, and we're nearing the 40-episode milestone. I guess, I don't know if you could say 40. People usually point towards 50, so maybe I should just put that aside until we get closer to 50.
Are you looking for a ring for me or something?
Yeah, I think that'd be nice on the 50-episode mark if we get there. I shouldn't count that column yet. We've still got a few episodes to go.
If anyone's getting a ring, it should be me for putting up with you all these years.
Right. That's kind of a loaded statement, buddy. But on a more serious note, David Loazzo, the Crow, he's always an interesting guest. Second time we've had him on the program. And, you know, it's kind of nice to hear, I guess, from a Canadian perspective, and there's a lot of international fans for David Loazzo. The fact that it sounds like he's going to land on his feet, that he has signed a deal with Showtime, and he was saying that it's going to be actually more money than his UFC contract, but you can still get the sense that his heart was still with the UFC.
Well, I hate to sound like a homer, which I'm constantly accused of, but it wasn't like Loazzo was ever, anyone ever accused him of being a boring fighter, and that was, I guess that was really old school of the UFC to do it. It's almost unheard of nowadays that they would ever let someone like that go, so it's just completely utterly confusing to me the steps that led up to that. So I'm not sure I know what to say about that.
Well, we heard David's explanation for what happened and unfolded with the Mike Swick fight, and he his take on it is that he was advancing and that Mike was the one who wasn't really engaging. And I'd have to go back and revisit the fight because I watched it a couple times. I watched it the first night, and then I watched it one more time the next day. So it's been a little while, but I would have to say, and I've always enjoyed watching David fight, especially the element of the elbows that he brings to fights. He can turn around fights and in a hurry, and he almost did that with Mike Swick again. It was almost like history repeating itself. But I still maintain that I think in both the Rich Franklin fight and the Mike Swick fight, when you've got multiple rounds where people aren't engaging. And, you know, and I know David would probably take issue with that. He would say that was necessarily the case. I guess the blame had to lay somewhere, and unfortunately they've laid it at David's feet, because you've got Rich Franklin, who was the champion until recently, and then you've got Mike Swick, who's arguably their number one rising middleweight star.
Yeah, I guess maybe they just didn't know where he was going to go after, you know, where he was going to go after that, and you know, the only other obvious guy for him to fight there would be Marquardt, who you know, seems to bring the boring to every fight that he's in. So I'm not sure. Maybe they just didn't want to be the three times unlucky with Loazzo against Marquardt. So I'm not sure. I'm not sure exactly where they're going. And you got to think that that's going to be a big loss. I think any fighter like Loazzo is a big draw, and certainly. Maybe they didn't think he was going to go anywhere else. Maybe they think he was going to be in the minors. But who knows? Who knows? Well, I guess who knows what's around the corner. And maybe if they knew he was going to be signed by Showtime, or even by someone like Bodog, maybe they wouldn't have let him go.
Perhaps. You know, I guess what I was trying to say a couple minutes ago was that, in my mind, from watching David Loazzo's career, and even before he made it to the UFC, watching him fight in TKO, his performance against Rich Franklin and Mike Swick, I still maintain that, you know, regardless if he says he was advancing the fight or trying to initiate some exchanges, there was something missing, and whether it was in his face or his overall game plan, it seemed like there was a nervous kind of tentativeness that he had both those fights. And, you know, I guess when you look at it from the UFC perspective, I'm not condoning what they did, but you're right. I mean, where do they put them from here? He had his title shot. He lost that. He had lost once before to Jorge Rivera, and now he's lost to Mike Swick back-to-back fights. But maybe if he had beaten someone else before losing to Swick, who knows? Maybe he'd still be in the UFC. But, you know, I'm looking forward to watching him fight in Showtime or wherever else he decides to fight.
And that's the reason I asked him why, if he wanted to fight more, because, you know, I'm not saying those are great fights that he was in, and you could tell in the first couple of rounds, you're like, okay, you know, well, okay, you had a round to get going, now let's get something going here, and there was an apprehension, but, you know, the same apprehension and the same rust was on, was apparent when Franklin fought Silva, you know, and, it'll be interesting to see, you know, if Franklin loses his next fight, are they going to fire him too, so. I guess it'll be interesting to see what happens. And he said that Joe Silva was unhappy with the way he fought, and I guess that's who pulls the trigger. So, but I think it will be good. I think if he can get a few more fights and doesn't have to wait 4 or 5 months to fight, and I think he needs to build up some good momentum, get some wins under his belt, I think, to get his confidence back. And again, you know, he's a great striker, but he's never been the overly aggressive fighter, and maybe people take that as a sign of weakness or apprehension on his part. I'm not sure if that's fair.
Mm-hmm. Well, and when we talk about the UFC and their roster fighters, of course, the big news and the dust still is somewhat to settle. And some of the finer points of what's going to happen really hasn't come through. But, of course, the big news that a couple sites reporting that the WFA has been bought by the UFC, as well as, I believe, the WEC is rumored to have been bought by the UFC. But for sure, with the WFA, the World Fighting Alliance, a lot of hoopla and buzz around that organization. Not earlier this year, signing key guys like Quinton Jackson, Heath Herring, eventually they signed Matt Lilland. And so now the speculation begins. I mean, apparently the UFC has inherited through that acquisition a few of the fighters' contracts that were, you know, still signed with the WFA. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. And of course, Brendan, the big name is Quinton Jackson and his inclusion now into the UFC light heavyweight division.
Yeah, I think Chuck asked for him. He finally got him. And I think the UFC actually got a bargain, because if Jackson would have gone on the open market, you know, I think he would have cost a lot of money to bring in, and again, I think they would have gotten a bidding war, so who knows, maybe they got themselves a little bargain in buying the WFA, and I'm not sure exactly. I think they basically pick and chose what they got there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of rumors
right now.
A lot of people seem to think that
Lindland was included, but Lindland told us that he was, that his WFA agreement had actually ended in November, so unless something else happened after that, I don't think that they do have him.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, Heath Herring, I guess, would be another person that people might overlook, but I think that'll be probably in foresight, probably maybe even more important than signing Rampage Jackson.
Yeah, and I want to talk about the Heath Herring inclusion into the heavyweight division in a second, but I think with Quinton Jackson, I'm not sure if I agree with what you're saying about him, what he would command on the open market. I think that part of the reason the WFA business model failed is they threw a lot of money around, and I think it was based on the assumption that mixed martial arts had really infiltrated the mainstream fans, etc., and that people were keenly aware of the Matt Lindlands, of Quinton Jackson from Japan. And I think, if anything, the 50,000, the rumored only 50,000 pay-per-views that they got in their first card, and the fact that they'd signed these guys to huge contracts, you know, there was talk about a couple $100,000 per fighter, etc., could be part of the reason they folded. So I'm not sure you know, how much money Quentin Jackson would have got on the open market. I certainly think that he has the potential to be a huge, and I've always said this, a huge, huge star in the United States. You know, he's got that undeniable charisma. The fact he's beaten Chuck Liddell, he certainly hasn't looked great in his last couple fights. Of course, he did beat Matt Lindland recently, but I think that if they give him a couple warm-up fights and Quentin Jackson can get back to his old style and his kind of old bravado, if you will, the potential for a fight with him and Chuck Liddell being a huge pay-per-view sell in, let's say, a year from now is enormous.
You know, there's no doubt about Rampage's potential in terms of his in terms of potential in terms of being a draw. You know, where Rampage fits in terms of the list of 205ers in the world, I don't know. I would be hard pressed to certainly. He's certainly not in the top five. I guess a better question would be whether he'd be even in the top 10. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't know what you think about that, but his fights certainly haven't overly impressed me. I saw him actually. I didn't see him winning that fight against against Lindland. I would have been much happier if it would have been considered a draw. And I don't know. He hasn't really knocked my socks off in the last couple of years. Now, mm-hmm. mind you, he's fought some really tough opponents. But I guess his last big win would have been, I guess his last really impressive win would have been against Arona, I suppose, in my opinion. And I think he was getting tooled in that fight as well before that ultra impressive slam knockout.
Yeah, there's no denying his stock has dropped considerably. I mean, if you look at who he's fought since the win over Arona, you're right, and that was in 2004. I just put up his record. Then Vanderlei knocked him out again. He narrowly defeated Marilla Ninja, who was utterly destroyed by Mauricio Shogunru after that. And then since then, other than Linlin, he's fought Dong Seok Yoon and Hirotaka Yokoi. Against Dong Seok Yoon, it was a unanimous decision victory. So he hasn't looked impressive, and yeah, we're talking about a couple of years now. So, I mean, if he can get back into the sort of mindset that he used to have and really come into the UFC bent on winning the championship, spreading his name around the United States, he has the potential to be, I think, a huge, huge star in the States. But whether or not that happens, you know, clearly remains to be seen. Be interesting to see as well if he starts to make waves in the UFC. You know, what will happen in regards to Pride? Will this somewhat push Pride into trying to get Vanderlei Silva up against their UFC competition again? Because then you've got a guy who's beaten Quentin Jackson twice before. Just a little sidebar there, but
yeah, I'm not sure. I think Dana White has basically had enough of Pride.
Yeah, I think so.
And from all the talking that he's done, recently now, it looks like he's not interested in making any fights with them anymore whatsoever. And I think even getting the WFA will take the pressure off him to do any more negotiating from Pride, because you know part of their justification for getting the WFA was we want to bring the best fighters and the best fights. Well, maybe that's their out to moving a step towards that. I think maybe they won't have to deal with Pride whatsoever. Maybe, yeah, it's interesting. Their corporate strategy seems to be changing, slightly. They seem to be opening up the purse strings a little bit more, but we'll see. It'll be an interesting year coming up.
Yeah.
I wish Loazo could have told us a little bit more about what kind of other fighters are being signed in the Showtime organization, who's actually fixing their fights and who's actually recruiting these people. It'll be interesting to see what happens in the press interview.
Yeah, I believe the actual organization is Pro Elite, or the Elite Fighting Championships, and that's going to be shown on Showtime, but I guess we'll find out more on Thursday. And I just wanted to add about Heath Herring going to the UFC, and part of the reason I wanted to discuss this was the fact that, and again, we should remind everybody that this is still, you know, nothing has been confirmed yet. Everyone is just kind of, it still remains to be seen whether or not we'll actually see Quentin Jackson, Heath Herring, and some of the other WFA assets actually fighting in the UFC, but everything seems to point to some of these fighters making the crossover, that the UFC has, like you said, picked certain contracts to hold on to. With so many rumors circulating about Pride's financial backing, their lack of a television deal, what's going to happen, and of course people involved in the organization are rallying behind Pride. I think we talked about that on our last show. But if it is true that Fedor Emelianenko might be nearing his end fighting for the Pride organization, and then rumors continue with Mirko Krokop that he might be leaving the Pride organization, and apparently it looks like as of today or yesterday he's pulled out of the New Year's show for Pride. Suddenly, yeah, you look at why would the UFC be anxious to negotiate with, to do conjoined shows with Pride at this point, especially if they get a guy like Keith Haring in their UFC division. All of a sudden that's another heavyweight contender. You make a couple more big signings and then things can be looking rather bright for the UFC in 2007.
Well, you've got to realize that Pride's value as an organization is basically grounded for the purposes of any business dealings in North America almost exclusively in their contractual obligations or their contractual agreements with fighters. Now, if you have outside of a contract, both Fedor and Krokop, you know, that's a big problem. That's a huge problem for Pride, I think. So it will be interesting to see if their fighters they've traditionally taken care of will demonstrate any loyalty towards the organization, or if they'll step out. And I think a lot of that remains to be seen.
Yeah, and the one thing, did you see the 60 Minutes special on mixed martial arts?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah. And the one thing I was really happy about that piece, although some people are kind of annoyed, I guess, with some of the questions, the line of questioning, just somewhat assuming that the UFC is entirely the current Azufa management ownership of the UFC. This version of the UFC is entirely responsible for the new rules and sanctioning of mixed martial arts, and that the UFC is entirely responsible for the spread of mixed martial arts throughout the states. Some people are taking issue with that, somewhat lacking of development in the story, I guess you could say. They certainly didn't seem to delve too hard into that. But outside of that, I really enjoyed the fact as well that not only did they talk about the UFC and its success, but really, you know, bringing in the IFL, talking to some of the fighters, showing the background, the training, and I thought overall the piece was quite favorable for mixed martial arts.
Well, it wasn't really. It didn't really have any teeth or anything like that. It was kind of just like an FYI piece, and in that regard, it was done. You'd hope to God if anyone could do a proper piece, an FYI piece, it would be 60 Minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they did they did an adequate job. But I think, speaking to Pat and speaking to Henzo, two articulate spokesmen of the sport, and you can probably be hard pressed to find any two better. And so, I was happy with it.
Yeah.
None of it particularly shocked me. And I guess I took the claim about the UFC basically being a claim about, you know, these guys are responsible for bringing MMA to the mainstream. But as much criticism as Dana White takes, it's difficult to argue with that claim.
Yeah, but I don't think it was so much that point. I think it was, and this has come up where I believe it was the Atlantic City Athletic Commissioner. He sent out a letter to many media outlets earlier this year, or might have been last year, taking issue with some of the interviews that Dana White had done, where the UFC someone claimed sole responsibility for reforming the rules, making mixed martial arts possible. When in fact, I believe some of the cards actually were already sanctioned under the SEG ownership prior to Zuffa. And there's no doubting the fact that, yeah, you're right. I mean, the UFC, as far as their marketing capabilities, what they've done for the sport, it's enormous. And we might not even have this show if it wasn't for the UFC. I can easily admit that. But you're right. I think it was kind of a fluff piece because they didn't really delve into that too much. It was almost as if they sort of took whatever was being said to them as gospel. And as well, I thought that the piece, to their credit, and I guess one could argue that I'm being somewhat hypocritical, that they didn't parade out a bunch of people, cutting down mixed martial arts, saying that it's a brutal sport. They didn't parade out a bunch of people who weren't knowledgeable about the sport, and I thought that was good, because sometimes I've seen other news pieces on mixed martial arts that, of course, they always have someone come out, whether it's a boxing expert or someone off an athletic commission somewhere that, you know, won't allow mixed martial arts. Like the CBC piece with Evan Solomon, very well done piece, very journalistically thorough. But they brought out Ontario's provincial commissioner, and he was talking about why he didn't care for mixed martial arts, and they had several journalists write about the fact that they didn't think mixed martial arts was a safe sport, etc. So it was kind of nice to see a piece that got away from the safety record a little bit and actually showed the skill and the intelligence of some of the fighters that the sport has.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's one of the problems with MMA is that it doesn't have any articulate, intelligent critics. You know, most of the critics of MMA are profoundly ignorant, unarticulate, and are either have some kind of vested interest, i.e., they're boxing people, or they just simply are buffoons, you know, talking out of their asses. So,
yeah.
I've, to be quite honest, I've never actually heard an articulate critique of MMA as a sport from either a sporting perspective or a safety perspective. So, you know, I think there's much. There's certainly much to be done if anyone wants to come up with that kind of criticism. And I think it's a good point, and it's a true point that the New Jersey Commission brings up. But still, it's kind of, I think to me it's kind of a point, and you know. And I guess we have Dana White to thank for this podcast. Didn't he show us how to do three-way calling?
Yeah, he was totally responsible for that, and we've never thanked him formally for that.
And that was very helpful. And then I am also Joe Silva's illegitimate son.
Right.
I don't believe a lot of people know that either.
Yeah,
so,
well, you've brought it up a couple times on the show.
Yeah, well,
quite
so
surprising
we have, you know,
considered your advanced age.
Yeah. Well, it's remarkable, you know.
Yeah, Joe Silva might only be a few years older than you, man, if he is. I don't even know.
Well, I know, and it just speaks volumes to his virility and tenacity, being able to actually propagate at that young an age.
The last bit I just wanted to touch on, it seems like the other part out of that 60 Minutes piece, it really seems to be a point that people are discussing several days removed from the broadcast, is the part where they speculated the IFL could be worth, or according to the public ownership of the company, they went public with stocks, etc., that it's worth over $150 million. Now, if that is accurate, Brendan, one would have to assume, and Dana White declined to give any specifics on this, which is understandable, considering the UFC is not a public company, that one would think if the IFL is indeed worth $150 million, then the UFC, if it were to go public on the stock market, would probably, you know, would be worth, I would estimate, at least double that.
Well, I guess, you know, I kind of had this, I've had two sort of whoops moments in my life, and they both had to do with not buying stocks that I had these intuitions about. Now, of course, I don't have any stocks whatsoever, but when Netscape went public, I had this feeling like I should buy some Netscape shares. Never did. And when Google went public, I had a feeling like I should buy some Google shares, and never did. And now the IFL, right before they had their share offering, I emailed all the prospectus and stuff to my friend who's a stockbroker, and a lazy piece of crap who often comes by and watches the UFC for free at my house. Never got back to me, and it looks like he screwed us both. So,
yeah.
So I think that, you know, and the IFL, their value is not speculated. That's what the value of the company. It's a public company, so it's
right.
Public record what their worth is in terms of the amounts of shares offered and what the shares are worth. Mm-hmm. UFC, on the other hand, is a private company, so they're under no obligation to publicize their profits whatsoever. So, you know, it wouldn't surprise me. It certainly wouldn't surprise me that's what the value of the company is, depending on how you figure it. And you know, good for them. It's nice to see the UFC really has transitioned very much into a proper business, and it's nice to see more business people being involved in the sport. And some people may criticize the quote unquote corporatization of the sport, but you gotta think, you know, the promoters of MMA were not sportsmen in love with the sport, traditionally. You know, they were kind of like, I wouldn't make any sort of ad hominem comments, but all the promoters that I've ever met were sort of, the greasier types. It's nice to see that the sport has taken on a legitimacy in terms of its management and its strategies of the owners and the promoters.
Well, I agree with you to an extent, but I think we should all be careful what one wishes for, because I think one needs to look no further than boxing, and once serious money got into the sport of boxing, we've all witnessed the unfortunate
boxing always was, though, a sort of cult of personality, you know, like, how many, look at Don King, the guy is a personality, when he shouldn't be. Why should a boxing promoter be a personality? But lo and behold, he is, right?
So, no, but I'm talking about, the fact that there was a buck to be had to get into pay-per-view rather than airing fights for free on network television. They went that route, which most people point to the turning point in boxing as, going away from being somewhat of a real mainstream sort of family sport, sort of funneling it into a market that only certain people could afford. And, I think that kind of day and age started with Mike Tyson, where they determined that there was more money to be made by pay-per-views rather than have to share profits, etc., with television networks and whatnot. So, yeah, it's a tricky issue, and we're out of time. Maybe we'll discuss it at another date, and maybe we won't.
I hope to God that we do, Kelsey.
All right, buddy. I'll make sure I write it down as something we can get back to next time someone bails on us or we have to kill some time.
I'll make a sticky note right now.
Okay.
How about that?
Well, Brendan, you enjoy the rest of the week, and I'm not sure we were going to do our picks tonight, but we weren't positive when the show was going to get posted because it is a bit later here on Tuesday, so enjoy the fights tomorrow night, Brendan, and we can discuss that later in the week for the results of Ultimate Fight Night.
Take it easy. Did you get any plagues of biblical proportions this week in Vancouver?
Well, we had a couple of huge windstorms that knocked out power in, I think, Burnaby and some of those surrounding areas. But other than that, it's been a fairly safe week.
No outbreaks of Ebola virus or anything like that?
No, but
yes.
It'll piggyback on the back of the next avian flu.
Probably.
I'm sure.
All right, buddy. Well, thanks for putting all those horrible thoughts in my head as I have to finish off the show and then go to bed. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Just make sure you wash your hands after you go to the bathroom.
Okay. Thanks.
All right, Kelsey.
Have a good night, buddy.
Bye-bye.